Okay, so this is what I'm going to do. While it's a case study, I am going to present to you what we did, how we worked through it, what were some of the thoughts that went through it, how we applied the key elements of counseling to the situation. But I want you to feel free to interrupt me. So I want you to feel free to ask questions and interrupt me throughout that process. So we'll have somewhat of a dialogue together through this issue. I've done my best to change names, but I might slip up a little bit here and there. But I've done my best. This is a real situation. Okay, it's a. I was minding my own business one day. And I received this exact email. My name is Kathy Johnson, and I have met with Marley Branson several times for counseling. My husband Craig and I have been married for close to 9 years and have two boys, ages 3 and 4. My husband has been verbally abusive for around 2 years now, and at the beginning of December, this is January, by the way, became physically abusive. He has pushed me into the wall a few times and has cornered me at least once for about an hour, physically restraining me. This past week, his anger escalated to a point that his verbal abuse and physical abuse made me terrified to remain at home, fearing for my safety as well as that of my children. He has never left a mark or inflicted lasting physical harm, but his threats of what he would do indicate that he could quickly escalate into more. Saturday, he threatened my life, and I felt it necessary to leave, and my boys and I are now staying with my brother. We are not members of the church, but have faithfully attended for 2.5 years. We regularly attend John and Patty Robinson's adult Bible fellowship class on Sunday, and I recently met with Patty and shared with her what was happening at home. She also knows where I am now. I am reaching out to you to see what you would advise as the next step to take to correct and mend our marriage relationship. I am craving godly wisdom and advice on what to do now, and am open to any help or guidance that the church can offer. Feel free to talk to Patty or Marley. You can reach me at email address or at thank you for your help and guidance. Sincerely, Kathy Johnson. So where do you start? Okay. So we start, and so I just give you four big kind of categories there, but first is compassion, care, and hope. We start with compassion, care, and hope. What I know that I need to do is I need to address the pain and the hurt first. There are certainly details that I need to know, but this is a woman who is what would be categorically expressed in Scripture as that of one who is oppressed. What is my obligation to the oppressed? So I deal with the safety of the family also. In this case, this one to a certain extent was made easy only because she had already moved out. She had a brother and a sister-in-law, and she was living with them. Matter of fact, the situation she was referring to, they were on a drive to her family. Things were getting heated in the car. He literally threatened, and he confirmed it, that he would kill her if she continued to be as stupid as she was continuing to be. And that it was only his relationship with God that restrained him.
Not very much restraint.
Well, he didn't kill her. I mean, but so when they arrived at the home, she was noticeably distraught. Her sister-in-law took her into a room privately and just started asking her what was going on. That's when much of this came out, and her family, her brother in particular, made it a point to remove her from the situation. Okay, so this was very helpful. This wasn't something we then had to do. Eventually we did. I think it's a sad thing that we as a church purchased a condominium not very far from our church for the intended purpose of housing people in situations like these. And so we did have a place for her to go. We prepared for it. And so there was a point where we did remove her from, or she moved from her brother's home and did move into that place. But we're getting ahead of ourselves now. So I want to address the pain. I want to address the hurt first. That's what I want to do. I want to deal with the safety of the family. I want to communicate with them. This is what I want her to know, and this is what I made certain I reemphasized every single time, because my response to this email was to call her and talk to her. I talked to the other people involved as well, but I needed to talk to her, and because I had a lot of questions to ask. But I communicated with her, and I told her up front, I want you to know something. I cannot promise a resolution to this situation. I cannot promise that your marriage is going to sing the praises of God. I cannot promise any of that, but I can promise you this. You will not go through this alone. That I can promise. And we will walk through this with you. That's what we wanted to communicate. We wanted to communicate, just as Galatians 6:2, that we are going to bear this burden with you. And you will not walk through this alone, neither will your husband. And again, for the particular people, that's either a comfort or a discomfort. And in this case, it was a comfort to her, and it was an incredible discomfort to him, that we were not going to let him walk through this alone either. But we were committed to both of them. We had to address the question, what is our responsibility to those who are oppressed? Psalm 9:9, the Lord is a stronghold for the oppressed, a stronghold in times of trouble. Isn't that comforting? I wanted her to know that. What does it mean to be a stronghold? It's a safe place. It's a secure place. God is your security. God is your safe place. To do injustice, Psalm 10, verse 18, to do justice to the fatherless and the oppressed, so that man is of the earth may strike terror no more. Psalm 72:14, from oppression and violence he redeems their life, and precious is their blood in his sight. Now we recognize in this situation, a matter of fact, if you were in the session prior, you're going to recognize the connection. The fact that do I show mercy on the man as well as the woman? Yes. My mercy is not indiscriminate, right? And what I talked about last time was, as ministers, as people helpers, we don't have the luxury of being on one side or the other. We minister to both of them. We minister to both of them with mercy and grace. Will it look different? Of course it will, because there's particular responses to what they do. Okay, every circumstance demands a particular response. Redeem me from man's oppression, Psalm 119, verse 134, that I may keep your precepts. As I spoke with her, you know, the obligation to dealing with the oppressed is also helping them recognize what is their priority, even through their oppression. You listen to what he says, redeem me from man's oppression. What is he asking for? He's asking for relief, yes? Very appropriate. But what's the intended purpose? That I may live a comfortable life. Is that what the psalmist says?
No.
No. That my life may be trouble-free. Is that what the psalmist says? That I may not have to go through this any longer. Is that what the psalmist says? The purpose of the heart and its intention is I may keep your precepts. So even in my prayer for relief, it's still about you, Lord. And that's something we want to make sure we keep the focus. He is one who executes justice for the oppressed. Psalm 146, verse 7. He gives food to the hungry. The Lord sets the prisoners free. Ecclesiastes 4:1. Solomon says, again, I saw all the oppressions that are done under the sun. Now, if there's to be any comfort in this, is to recognize that no one should be surprised. We should never be surprised that people are being oppressed. That should never shock us. That should never surprise us. It's common. In a sin-cursed world, it is common. I saw all the oppressions that are done under the sun, and behold, the tears of the oppressed. And they had no one to comfort them. On the side of the oppressors was power, and there was no one to comfort them. Our dedication to those who are oppressed is that there will be someone to comfort them, right? That's what I want to communicate. Wanted so hard to communicate with her. I don't know how many times I said I told her. And I'm going to call her by her real name, which I know I won't do. I forget what made-up name I gave her. But thank you, Kathy. I told Kathy. It's so weird making up name. I make an awful liar. But I guess that's good. So I told her, it seemed like I would ask a question, I would say something, and then almost immediately I'd say, look, I just want to remind you, you're not going to walk through this alone. We're here to comfort you. And I do think it got to the point where I was like, I want to remind you. And she's like, I know you're not going to let me walk through this alone, you know? And it's sort of like, good. I really want you to know that. We want to comfort you. We don't want this observation to be made about you. That here were the tears of the oppressed, and there was no one to comfort them. That's what we do not want to have happen. Isaiah, learn to do good, seek justice, correct oppression. Bring justice to the fatherless, plead the widow's cause. Isaiah 1, verse 17. And then lastly, Isaiah 53, 7 through 8, description of our Lord. He was oppressed. He was oppressed. He was afflicted. Our God knows what you're going through. I know it's so hard to imagine, and I know it's so hard to even consider at times, but our Lord knows what you're going through. Meaning, as we talked about in the last workshop, Hebrews 4, 14 through 16 becomes a very important passage to draw her attention to. I want her to practice drawing near to the throne of grace. You know as well that I want him, her husband, to practice the very same thing. I want them both to practice that. Okay, so there are just some thoughts there. And the last thought is also this one. You must keep in mind Proverbs 18, 17. The first person to plead their case always seems right until someone else comes and examines it. I also, in that first conversation I had with her, so my response to this email was I talked immediately. Here's the other thing, too. Deal with it immediately. That's part of showing comfort. Part of me comforting her was also dealing with it right away. Within the day, I was on the phone with the people that she mentioned to get the story and the background from them. What did they know? And then before that day ended, I contacted her and spent time on the phone with her. And I probably spent about 2 hours on the phone with her. I would have probably rather met with her in person, but that wasn't possible. So if you can meet in person, I mean, that would be preferable. But if not, get the information anyway. Don't wait for the right conditions before we move forward. That's another wonderful advice from Ecclesiastes. The one who waits for the weather to be just right will never plant. And if you wait for all the conditions to be just right, you'll never do it. So we get to it right away. But I also had to remind her. What's her name again? Laura? Kathy, thank you. So not that you guys would know her, but anyway, I just still want to protect the name. But so the other thing that I wanted to communicate to Kathy was this. After I'd walked through, I then wanted to say, look, I'm going to say something to you right now that may not be very comfortable. You know that I want you to know I believe everything you've told me. But I also understand the condition of our hearts, and I also know that all of us have a tendency. Okay. We all have a tendency to show ourselves in a greater light. I'm not saying you're doing that. It's just I know that that's a possibility. I do it. We do it. We all do it. So I need you to understand Proverbs 18, 17 reminds me the first person to plead their case. Okay. And I explain that. So I just need you to know that I do need to talk with your husband. And I do need to hear from him. And I'm just going to kind of go out on a limb and say he's probably going to have a difference of opinion. Okay? She said, yeah, I know that. I said, wonderful. And I said, look, again, I believe everything you've told me. I have no reason to doubt it whatsoever. But for me to best help you and to best honor your request about helping mend your marriage, I do need to understand where he's coming from, and I need to understand from his own words his description of the situation. So I need you to know that's not in any way me siding with you or siding with him. I don't have the luxury of doing that. I just want you to know, I know, I'm not going to walk through this alone. That's right. That's right. You're not going to walk through this alone. And then I ended my time in prayer for her. Okay. All right. Thoughts about that first category? Compassion, care, and hope.
Good start.
Good start. Okay. Yeah. Well, in the midst of that conversation, there was a lot of information I needed. So I did need to ask some questions. So what were some of the things I needed to know? Well, I needed to spend some time asking about details, but here's the caution. Only what is necessary to know. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, because I need to understand its frequency. I need to understand its intensity. I also need to understand its breadth. How far does this extend? So I needed to know particulars. When you talk about the verbal, can you unpack that a little bit for me? So she gave me some examples, and we walked through that, and I'm making notes on that. So you've talked about some of the physical stuff, so can you help me understand some of that? A lot more things came to mind. So remember, I mean, that email was just genuinely, it was the tip of the iceberg of what had been going on. There was a lot more going on, and asking some of those questions was helping me understand it. But I also had to be very sensitive. So in particular, I needed to know if this extended to their intimate life. Did this extend to their sexual life? But that was one of those areas where I simply walked into it and I said, Kathy, listen, I do not need to know details. But I do need to ask a very sensitive question. Has any of this abuse occurred in your sexual relationship with one another? And it did. But I didn't need to know the details. So the issue is, again, sensitivity. I need to know what I need to know and nothing more. I need to know what I need to know, but nothing more. So I do need to understand the intensity of it. I do need to understand the frequency of it. And I do need to understand the breadth of it. That's important. Okay. And I do need some specifics to clarify some vague statements. But I also recognize this. I don't need to know everything right now. So that means as well as I'm sensitive to my conversation. If I sense that it's getting a little overwhelming, I can pause, and I can get that information at a later date. And I can just simply say to Kathy, hey, listen, I'm understanding this is heavy, and there's no reason for us to continue talking about this right now. I'll call you back. Well, let's schedule a meeting. Let's get together in a couple days, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. And let's get the other ladies involved, and let's spend some time. We'll talk a little bit more about that, okay? Simple, something like that.
So
yep.
When you're talking to is there another female counselor with you doing this, or are you just talking to her individually?
Right now I'm talking to her individually. Okay. Yeah, we don't have the ideal situation going on. Okay. I preferred timeliness over ideal. Okay. I preferred that. I thought she reached out to me specifically. My name was on the email. It was only my name on the email. So I went, I just went right and talked to her immediately. And we're going to get to a little bit of what you just mentioned. We'll get to that in a little bit. All right. Here are some other questions I wanted to ask. I did want to ask whether her husband in this case knows whether anyone else knows about the situation. Does he know that other people know? Okay. Does he know you're talking to others about it? And again, I already said, with great sensitivity, I explain I believe everything, but that I have to hear the other person's side. And I need to ask him questions as well. So that means I also need to walk away from that time with the contact information for her husband. And then I have to make a plan to contact the abusing spouse and set up a face-to-face conversation ASAP. I do not let time go by. It's not going to be very comforting to her if she has to call me 2 weeks later and ask me if I've reached out to her husband and me say something like, oh, I'm so sorry, I've been so busy. No. Right. All right. Any thoughts about questions and about more information? Laura?
I want to know what changed 2 years ago. I mean, it's a 9-year marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That's good. Yeah. She mentioned timelines. So what happened? What occurred?
What happened in his life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does she have any idea of what happened or transpired in his life? Okay. That provoked that change. And that did come out. And I'll talk about that a little bit when I start addressing a timeline of just kind of how things transpired. Yep, Richard.
What about the two boys?
Yeah. What, is there a question for him, or?
What did you do with that?
Well, so I did ask questions about, have you noticed how this has affected your 3- and 4-year-old? So have you noticed any of this having any effect on your children? And it did. In some of those situations, the children were right in the middle of it. In particular was when he restrained her. Because I came to find out that actually there had been a restraining moment of about 2 hours. He held her captive for 2 hours, lectured her for an entire 2 hours in front of the kids. Question here and then back there. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. Up to this point, we got the law involved, but not at this point. Yeah. So I'll share about, the question was about whether or not should we get the law involved at that time? At that time, we didn't have anything. So again, you have to understand in that situation, she has to file charges. She wasn't interested in filing charges and at this time. Now, did we get the law involved? Yes, we did a little bit later on, and I'll share that with the, when we go through a timeline. Yeah.
It seems like an important point that in the beginning, neither were members of the church, neither committed themselves under the authority of the church.
Yeah.
And so I'm sort of curious in terms of the premise of engagement.
Mm-hmm. No, we saw that as
secondary.
Yeah. It was way down the line. So no, we're gonna deal with it at its face value as the situation arose. Right here and then right over here. Go ahead.
Was there any abuse that was directed specifically to the children?
None. No abuse of the children from her report or his report. So mm-hmm.
Did you request her permission before talking to the brother? And what would you have done if she told you, no, I'm sorry, you don't have my permission to talk to my husband?
Oh, Okay, so I heard brother and husband. So, one, we never talked with the brother. But I talked to the ladies. She specifically in the email said you can contact them. So I spoke to them, and I called her, and then I said I need to talk to your husband, and so she was perfectly fine with that. Yeah, that raises a maybe a that would could raise a big red flag, you know, if she says, well, you know, don't contact my husband. There's a sense I probably would disregard her request because I've just now become privy of a situation, and you know, there's a sense we need to talk. I wouldn't talk to him though. Here's the other thing: I'm not going to talk to him unless I know she's in a safe place. But you also need to understand if she says, you know, if she's still with him and she just wants to talk about it, but she doesn't want you to talk to him. There's a sense. I mean, we're somewhat strapped, and there's not a lot we can do because she's willingly going through it. Now, here's another caveat. Is she biblically obligated to leave him?
No.
So what are you going to do if she chooses to stay? Will you still support her? Yeah.
Divorce or get out of Dodge?
And the truth is, she's not in any way. She can love the Lord her God with all her heart, mind, and soul and stay. She can love the Lord her God in all heart, mind, and soul and separate. So that means our obligation is, I also communicated to her, we will support her, whichever she chooses.
But the kind of support you can give her is much more limited if she stays there.
Correct. It's different. It looks different, but it's there nonetheless. When I say we're going to walk through this with her, we mean it. And we're not going to confront her on something when she's not doing anything biblically wrong. Might it be a wisdom issue? Sure. But it's not a thus saith the Lord issue. Yeah, so would anything change if she was not at our church, but it was actually someone from the community that was reaching out? No, I believe we would handle it the same way, but obviously I wouldn't expect much response from the husband in particular because, you know, who in the world are you? You know, type of a thing. I mean, I could expect that.
You've got no platform at all.
Yeah, we don't have any in their life. But I would hope, you know, we would respond similarly just to be of help. I mean, again, I think our help is going to look a little different because I think there's only so much we can do. And a lot of that, again, is going to be based on how they respond to the help. We'll be a part of it also. So let's... let's move on to next steps. So what I'm going to share with you, kind of general next steps, and then as far as a plan of action, then I'm going to walk you through the timeline. I'm going to give you some step-by-step of how it transpired. Here's the first thing that I'm doing once I'm off the phone. I'm assembling a team. Don't go at this alone. Do not go at this alone. Are you violating Scripture if you go at it alone? No. Are you being foolish? Yeah, I think so. Okay, I mean, and again, is that my opinion? Yep, it is. Take it for what it's worth, but assemble a team of people to help. And you're going to see as we get into the timeline where this really paid off. But assemble a team. She's already mentioned people. We already have people involved. That made it easy. There was a sense that it was easy. If this comes at you out of the blue and there's no connection, then we're going to get people involved, and we need to let them know that. This is a team approach. This is a church approach. We do that in some sense when we explain what our counseling is. We actually explain in our facts about biblical counseling that this is a team approach. We do let people know that ahead of time. We've always let people know that ahead of time. It's never a solo situation. I also want to sit down and map out a vision for the couple and then make sure all of us in the team is on the same page. In other words, my vision for this couple is I want their marriage to sing. I'd love for it to be restored, and I'd love for it to sing the praises of God. I would love, my vision for them is that they would be an Ephesians 5 marriage, that their relationship to one another would exemplify the relationship between Christ and the church. That's the vision. Might it get there? Yes. Might it not? Yes. We know that, but we cast that vision. We're all in this together, right? Because what I don't want is I don't want people who say, no, this man's got to pay. That's what has to happen. Now, that's reflective of what's in my heart. Yep. That's why it's so easy for me to say it with that kind of passion. Because I'm fighting that the whole time. Okay? But that's just not the heart of our God. And if we're His church and we're His bride and we're His body, we have a responsibility to showcase Him. Meaning I show mercy on this man. Because this man is bringing upon wickedness, upon sorrow, on his own life and on the lives of his children and on the life of his wife. Because he's caught in a trespass. And I want to restore him. That is my vision. I want to bring restoration. Make sure that the spiritual leaders are aware. So in this case, yes, I was one of them. Okay. But it was also something I brought to the attention of my fellow elders. We have a situation. I don't divulge the details in the moment. Again, you just share what needs to be shared. But we need to be aware of this. This is what we're dealing with. I have assembled this team to address it, and I need you guys to be aware of it. If it's you, and you want to draw their attention, if you're a layperson, your leaders need to be aware of this situation. This is a serious family crisis situation, and the leaders of the family need to know. And then contact the abusing spouse ASAP and start meeting with them. Okay, so this is the general next steps. Any questions about the next steps? Yes, sir. Yeah, in this case, it was three men and three ladies. So I had two other couples. That doesn't work out. It was three men and two ladies. There we go. Because I had two other couples and myself. One of the couples was a fellow elder and his wife. And then the other couple was a ministry leader. And his wife. He in particular, that one couple were the leaders of the Sunday school class that they were attending. So that was the other issue. It was in, I forget their names. I know their names, but not their fake ones. I'd make an awful CIA agent, right? but because I want to involve the people immediately connected to them. So who are their immediate mentorees, disciplers, caregivers, so on. And so that couple had known him for over 2.5 years. And then the other couple, the wife in particular, knew because she had gotten some counseling from her. So I just got the people that were already connected. Now, it's not always possible, but in this case it was. So that made it easy of who to connect. Oh, I pick anybody. I mean, I'll pick an elder, probably an elder and his wife, and then I'll look for somebody else just that I think would do well. And again, what does this imply? Be ready. Oh, please, please, please. You know, one of the greatest ways we comfort people that comfort the oppressed is being ready for them. This is why this kind of training is so important. This is why last night when we talked about training and equipping the church, that everyone recognizes they are responsible for doing it, so that when oppressed people come into our midst, it's batter up. Who's next? anyone and everybody in this room can come alongside and help. Are we prepared for that? So that's one way, as a church as a whole, we can comfort the oppressed and be prepared to help the oppressed, is by being ready. Okay. There was a question over back here, and then we'll go here, and then we'll go here. Go for it. Yeah. Yeah. So the husband's an unbeliever. Yeah. And she's a believer. So my approach is the same, because we recognize the sacredness of marriage. And so at this point, we're treating it as such. So the initial approach is the same. Over time, may it change? Yes. However, in the initial approach, they are to remain as they are at this point. And so the approach would be the same. Well, I'm going to reach out to him. Here's the thing. Based on whether she declares him a believer or not is inconsequential, because it's going to be my interaction with him that I'll begin to get a true assessment of what's going on. I'll have to admit, walking into it, I assumed he wasn't, mainly because of what he had been doing. That was my assumption going into it. I did not authoritatively judge him as such. But that was at least the theory going into it that needed to be tested. So that's how I approached it. Yes, sir. Jim?
What if the abusing husband didn't want to see you?
Yeah, that's a tough one. The question there was, what if the abusing husband did not want to see me? Okay. Then we're going to care for the wife. And we're going to focus and zero in all our care on the wife. And it's going to provide a unique situation in that we're going to guide her, we're going to direct her. But if he's coming to that Sunday school class, we're going to see him. And we're going to confront him. So we're going to talk to him about it. Now, again, I understand the sinfulness of people, and because of the understanding of my sinfulness of people, I also recognize people can behave in a particular way. I'm not going to confront a man like that without somebody else around me. So, I mean, you need to understand, I confronted a guy who was committing adultery. And he got ticked. He stormed out of the office screaming and yelling. Well, then he came back screaming and yelling. Pulls out a book from my shelf and chucks it right at my head. Now, by God's grace, he missed. He storms out. We had electronic locks on our property. We did a lockdown, called his wife, because he's coming home hot. And then dust settles and everything. I go pick up the book, Ed Wheat's book, Intended for Pleasure. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what you call sovereign comedy. yes, sir.
When you assembled your team, did you have a specific division of responsibility for certain people, or is it just kind of zone defense and fill in where needed?
Yeah, probably more of the zone defense fill in when needed. The point was going to be that the three ladies would meet with her regularly in some capacity, two ladies would meet with her, and the three of us, there were never going to be one of us. There was always going to be minimally two, and if all three could be there, then we would. So that was the objective. And then that way, we debriefed always after every time we would meet with them and kind of just keep following up with what are our next steps, what are we going to do next, so on and so forth. So there was somebody over here and then in the back. Go ahead.
That was my question, actually. So.
Okay, awesome. Yes, sir. Yes.
And I guess that kind of led me to wondering how much is this shared with your spouse?
My spouse?
Yeah.
Zero.
Oh, God.
Zero. Part of onboarding elders is I would meet with their wives. And I would say, I need you to understand something. Your husband's going to have to stomach some things that he might not be able to share with you. One, are you okay stomaching that with him? Are you okay walking alongside, watching your husband stomach some really hard issues in the church and not knowing anything about it? Are you okay with that? Because that's what you're going to be called on. So we just had, that's just been a policy that I've worked under. Am I free to say to my wife, you know, Lord, she's not Lord, sorry. Jenny, and that's her real name, by the way. Jenny, you know, I do need you to know that we're walking through some really hard issues right now, and I could really appreciate your prayer. And then she knows over time, after, 25 years of pastoral ministry, she knows not to ask any more questions. She knows that. And then if we're at liberty to talk about it, then we will. Part of that is to protect her, okay? It's also to protect the people, because sometimes now my wife is sitting here trying to figure out what can I share and what can I not. And then we've had situations where a wife mistakenly shares something, and that's a heartache we did not need to have to deal with. So we just avoid a lot of that. So that's just been our policy. Okay. Thus saith the Lord policy, no. Ours, yes. Yes, ma'am.
Would you take it as seriously if it was just verbal? You use the phrase verbally abusive.
Mm-hmm.
Would you take it just as seriously?
Yes. Yes.
Because I feel like I come up against that a lot.
Yeah. I take it as serious. We need to know what's going on. So that's, I guess to a certain extent, there's very few things we just don't take serious that we don't get to right away. Like there's just certain, we just get to it right away because we need to find out what's going on. So we need to know as soon as we possibly can so that we can then provide the proper judgment and plan of action. Because that's why I talked about what we need to know is we need to know frequency, we need to know intensity, and we need to know the breadth. Very important, because that helps us determine where we go from there.
If I could just ask a follow-up question, do you have some sort of guideline of what is considered verbally abusive? I know I've seen a couple of materials, but is there kind of a...
No, I just want you to know I'm wary. I want to be very cautious and careful with some of the guidelines, because some of the guidelines that are out there are not being produced by biblically minded people. You need to understand that if left unchecked, some of those lists, you know, are going to include, he looked at me the wrong way. So we need to be really careful with that, because some of that stuff's getting a little bit crazy. So that's why it's just very important. We need to ask questions. We need to judge it on the merit of what we have in front of us. Be faithful to that. That's what we need to do. So because there's not necessarily, look, we need to understand too, when you're defining it biblically, it's not like there's certain amount of speech that then all of a sudden changes from non-abusive to abusive. There's not really that kind of category. I mean, there is speech that tears down. There is speech that's unkind. There is there's speech that is slander. There is speech that is gossip. Like, we have categories within the scriptures. So I'm always going to judge it accordingly. And based on how you say what you say and when you say it and the frequency of how you say it, that's showcasing a heart that is malicious. That's what we're going to start evaluating it. So. Yep.
And so at any point, did you contemplate involving the authorities?
Yeah, that was the question there. Again, why not? Because she has to file charges.
Was it recommended to her to do that?
No, we asked her, but not a recommendation, but we asked her. So, yep. Did you have a question? Well, in this case, she provided the names. So in this case, it was easy.
And if she wasn't okay with the Sunday school leader or if she had wanted another couple that wasn't the leader already in the church, what are your thoughts on
that? Oh, I might ask why, But I'm probably going to oblige. So there's probably, I mean, I'll ask why. I mean, I'll just see. It might initially be a little bit of a red flag, but I'll just ask why, and then I'll oblige. There's no reason not to in this case. And unless there's something about her they know that she doesn't want known, I mean, I guess that could be an issue. But she's already given me permission to talk to him in this case. So, yeah, a lot of scenarios, certainly. Let me just close with this. I'm spending time answering your questions. I hope that's helpful. I hope that's been helpful for you. But let me just give it to you. So we had three. So this is what we did. We broke it down. We said, here's our counseling team, the leaders of the counseling team, which was me. And then we had lay counselors. We had two men, and we had two women. And then our goals, we wrote down to love and care for them, to guide them and strengthen their relationship with God by confessing and repenting, understand, work through the root cause issues in their relationship, and restore their marriage. That's what our vision was. That's where we were heading. We walked through. We're going to follow the guidance of Proverbs 18 and Matthew 18 and so on. And so we want to identify sin and recommended Bible and prayer and so on. So what happened? Well, so she reached out. And after some data gathering and working through information, we learned more information. I don't have time to go into that detail. But basically what happened was after we got the information and talked with her, I got in touch with her husband and requested a meeting. I met with him 2 days later to hear his side of the story. I was going to say their names. The other men were with me. I kept them with me the whole time. Now, how did that play out? Well, I'll tell you how it played out, because at some point, his stiff-neckedness, okay, we make up words up here, rose to such an extent that he showed up on a Sunday morning after service during a prayer time and asked and basically went before them, accusing me of being his oppressor, because the law did get involved. Matter of fact, she went to the court and petitioned for a protective order, which the judge gave in a heartbeat, and actually had given it for 2 years without blinking an eye, based on the evidence. He violated that PO multiple times, and we turned him in. Multiple times. He came and accused me of being his oppressor. Now imagine if I had been the only one meeting with him. What leg do I have to stand on? But I had two other, and the women as well, involved the entire time. And we had records of everything. This timeline document that I'm actually have right here pulled up, I didn't realize how long it was. And this is actually a summary. We called this a summary timeline, 45 pages. And I presented this to our elders when I presented to them that we must trespass him off of our property. And these are the reasons why, which we eventually had to do. But we met with him. We heard his side of the story. Obviously, more things came out. He initially seemed repentant. I forgot about that part. I was just looking at the notes, but about 3 days after we talked with him, he seemed repentant. But then it was only 2 days after that that the protection order was filed. And it was 2 days after that that we met with him to give him a heads up. And it was a few days after that that the accusatory emails began to come with much fervor. Not only that, I received a phone call from his parents, who are missionaries. And this is a questionable part. And I sometimes still question it, because they were accusing me of violating 1 Corinthians and taking a believer to court. And I kept reminding them that this is not that. This is a Romans 13 issue. Okay, this is a Rome. Nah, we don't see. Okay, and they just kind of kept. And I said, let me explain something to you. Do you know what your son has done? And then I went into the specifics. It took me 10 minutes to explain it. And then there was silence. And honestly, I believed I'd won him over. First response from the mom was, well, it takes two to tango. And I was quite devastated by that. Okay. Yes, sir. Wasn't much. I mean, fundamentally, so they were married 7 years when, oh, no, they were married five years when they had their first child. And I think their second child then was born, and that child developed colic. And that was really tough on him. So he started responding because of that. And fundamentally, it just kind of, that was it. It was sort of like, you know, there it was, and then he just kind of just kept at it. And very, very proud, very much thought she was inferior, treated her like that, and it just continued. And that was part of the problem, you know, it wasn't getting, obviously nothing was, he wasn't changing. I mean, he really thought he was in the right. So it was just getting worse because of that, right? Blessed are the poor in spirit, and he wasn't there, and he wasn't seeing things accurately. So, and also, again, here's another issue of wanting to have a team. All these accusatory emails started coming. Well, do we respond to them, and if so, how? So I had these other men, the three of us together, crafted responses. So that made that a lot more helpful. So I guess it was, I do have it here, it was only, so it was a month after this happened, and it was about a week, or protection order was filed on the 10th. 2 weeks after the protection order was filed is when I spoke with his parents. We had a handful of face-to-face meetings with him, and we did get them together one time. And then nothing more after that. We had to, here was a clarification that we had to give. I'll kind of just close with this, that we had to give on the protection order. There were 4 points we made with him. We have not told Kathy that she is obligated by God's word to petition the court for a protection order. He thought we were the ones responsible for it. We had did it. We told her it was an available option. But we didn't say, thus saith the Lord, you must do it. She took it. She was within her right to take it. I said, according to Romans 13, we support her decision to do so given the facts that have been stated and confirmed by you. Number 3, Kathy is free to rescind the order at any time. We are not telling her that she is biblically obligated. And number 4, we have sought to help you navigate the circumstances in a way that will lead to her rescinding the order and restoring your home. We have been in favor of this from the beginning. In other words, we've been on your stated side from the very beginning. However, the reason things are in place the way they are is because of how you continue to choose to respond to these situations. And in part, you refuse to listen to our counsel. And you have continued to refuse to listen to our counsel. So, he didn't understand the impact of his consequences, his words and actions. There was no godly sorrow. There was no acceptance of consequences. There was a pattern of blame shifting. He fixated on the specks in others' eyes. He had done his homework assignment, but was not receiving reproof and correction from it. So he'd go through all the motions, but that was about it. We laid out a plan for them because we don't want to leave anybody in mystery or in the dark. Even to him, we said, look, here, and we gave time limits. Separation for X number of time. We'll come back and we'll assess the situation. Okay? We'll assess the situation. These are the times we're going to assess the situation. We just kept laying it out, trying to be as specific as we can so that nobody is mysterious. Why? Because we don't want mystery to become a stumbling block for him. We don't want ambiguity to become a stumbling block. So being specific with the time was very helpful. All right. We could talk more about it. I know that. I hope this is helpful. Yeah, nothing's changed. My understanding is they're not divorced, but they're not together. She is thriving. We actually hired her at the church. She's still working at the church. She has since been able to get her own place. But nothing changed with him.